Pond's Master by Lisa Jones, read by Sarah McGillivray. Hello.
Nothing.
He's a bit quiet. He likes being quiet, don't you, Cliff?
Cliff nodded, red-eyed, and went back to loosening a scab from his lower lip, scraping and chewing and swallowing in a ritual I instinctively felt to be none of my business. His t-shirt was a little too big for him, careworn and bobbled, and on the front of it a speech bubble belonging to a grinning worm said, "You are never alone with a book," in an informal sloping typeface. It wore reading glasses while a tiny copy of The Mill on the Floss hovered in the air in front of its face, as if being held by invisible hands. Cliff inhaled from a tube of Pritt stick apparently lifted from the next desk, where a child sat crying into an unfinished collage.
"Excuse him," whispered Eunice, scanning the room for library staff. "He's on a polyoxythylene high. He'd offer you some, but he has multiple creative projects on the go just now. It's very important that he focuses his attention inwards."
"Oh, so the Pritt stick
helps him visualise, yes. He designs pantomime horses with a socio-political edge. Cliff feels that to effect real change, you have to infiltrate the mainstream, which is why he's doing Mother Goose at Dunstable Community Hall. This year, he's considering a complete deconstruction of what we mean by horse. Possibly doing away with the costume entirely and forcing the actors to really up their game. But it's all a process, you know?"
I tried to smile to Cliff, but could feel my face stiffening and cracking under my makeup and decided not to bother. An insect had flown into my eye and died that morning, and I was distracted by a small heap of what had once been legs congealing within my clumped mascara. Cliff noticed none of this through his solvent haze, barely registering my presence, passively allowing his girlfriend to squeeze a red imprint into his left hand as she talked and talked and talked.
"People are always surprised by the name, aren't they, Cliff? It's either an old man's name or a very young man's, that is, a baby's name. Like the kind of name that might just be about to start coming back, ironically. But he's 28, so I'm not sure what his parents were thinking." I didn't know which parts of Cliff were ironic. Between the clothes and the loud masticating mouth and the stolen craft glue hardening around his septum. I decided to assume that all of him was, since Eunice was going out with him. I wanted to leave, and couldn't understand why they were just sitting there bookless in the library anyway, aside from the fact that the whole thing went well with Cliff's t-shirt.
"So how are you? I haven't seen you face to face in months. I don't think we've ever hung out since that time in Shetland with Angel and Flossie and dead Beatrice."
Beatrice had gained social currency after dying young. Having had no distinguishing features in life, she was now instantly memorable as dead Beatrice. Everyone could suddenly recall having been great friends with her at some time or another.
"I felt so bad about missing that funeral," said Eunice, doing a kind of parodic sad face as if she'd lost an umbrella. "I said I'd go, and then it got to the day, and I just had so much going on. There were loads of us messaging in the group chat we set up for her. I think that was us paying our respects, in a way. How was it?"
It had been like a particularly slow and under-attended harvest festival sermon, with only a shuddering cluster of relatives, and the usual uninvited funeral tourists who'd scoped out Beatrice in the local obituaries. I hadn't known where to sit, feeling that I didn't belong in either group, and ended up dithering in a back pew, mouthing the words to Jerusalem next to a guilty-looking ex-boyfriend. The eulogy had been delivered uncomfortably by a man in his 50s who seemed to be there by accident, as if a wedding uncle had been sent instead of a funeral uncle. He made joke after joke, until it felt like the equivalent of staring too long at an unfunny toilet door sign in a family restaurant.
It was beautiful, very her, I said, struggling to remember anything at all about Beatrice.
Cliff had picked up something in a yellowing laminated cover called Teenage Teen from the young adult fiction section, which seemed to be about dealing with spotty skin in the 1980s. Eunice had stopped listening about the funeral and begun taking photographs of her boyfriend either reading or not reading or making fun of people who pretend to read in photographs by pretending not to read. He was probably, at that very moment, coming up with a horse that would shock the world. I looked at them with an unexpected pang of jealousy, suddenly conscious of how long it had been since any hand had clasped mine. I muttered goodbye to Eunice, who was now lost in studied appreciation of the cadaverous young man she somehow loved. My trainer squeaked all the way to the exit of the still and silent library, while a polythene bag of Mills and Boone hardcovers hung heavy on my fingers.
"Who does your gas and electricity?"
demanded a Teflon suit as I crept onto the high street.
"Sorry, no one, sorry," I said too quickly to be heard, wondering if I'd get home in time to catch Pondmaster on Quiz TV Plus One.